Stay tuned for The Turning Point. First thing I've got to do is thank everybody who responded last week. It was quite extraordinary. I was overwhelmed by it. Tremendous amount of response. It's the first time I was on in 6 months. And I was very glad to hear from everybody who heard the show. So thank you again. One thing to add, which I unfortunately maybe adding on a regular basis until things get better, is that if you're a new listener, last week I talked, if you're an old listener, I talked about the fact that my voice sounds a little scratchy, and it does. If it sounds a little scratchy to you, it's because it is. And this is, my throat is under construction right now, or reconstruction, so there are reasons for that, which I mentioned last week. If you're a new listener, well, you might want to just listen to the content. The style is not going to be as smooth as I would ordinarily like it to be. Now, one of the responses, in fact, more than one of the responses I got last week, when I was talking about my heart, which was attacked, I had a heart attack, and everything that came out of that, so that was subject last week. And during the discourse or whatever it is, the sermon, I was talking about how the idea of your heart centers on love. You know, people put the two things together all the time. You know, my heart goes out to you, or you have won my heart. So a response from a lot of people was, about the connection between an injury to your heart or the fact that your heart almost stops beating and the idea of love. And someone actually wrote to me, really nice guy wrote to me, he says, maybe you could teach us about love. Maybe you could talk about love. Well, I would be happy to talk about love if I knew one single thing about it. I spent the last several days making notes, many, many notes, looking up quotes on love, very famous quotes, picking out songs about love, and making all sorts of notes and ideas that I had, feelings I've had about love, my own personal experiences with love. And my conclusion is I don't know anything about it at all. So if this show is not linear in any way, or if it sounds detached, it's because I am just groping my way in the dark on this subject. And I'm assuming that a lot of other people are too. I mean, there is no, how many love songs are there? I mean, just count in English or American songs about love. Everything from, you know, every recorded song from 1892, whenever they recorded the first one, or 1881 or something, the first gramophone song up until yesterday for some song that came out, or this morning, 4 million songs about love. And love is probably a word that people use in families or on, you hear it on TV, you hear it in the movies. It's one of the most important concepts in you, maybe the most important concept or foundational feeling or operational feeling of all of humanity. And it's used so frequently that nobody really quite, I think, knows what it is anymore, except you know it when you feel it. But maybe you think you know it when you feel it. And for instance, maybe start off with myself. I mean, in my life, if I understand what love is, and I'm no one to give any answers, just these are all questions today. But who have I loved in my life? I've known a million people in my life, you know, through jobs, people responding to the radio show, friends walking on the street, various things I've done. You know, I've known so many people. We've all known so many people. The older we get, the more people we know or we've known. But I was thinking about who can I say I loved as far as I understand what it really means. And I guess I love my parents. Now, doesn't everybody love their parents? Now, you may think you hate your parents. And this a lot of this depends on how old you are. If you're a teenager, you'll walk around sometimes telling other people you hate your parents, or I hate my father because, or I hate my mother because whatever, fill in the blank. Or sometimes you'll actually say that, you know, although you couldn't get away with that, you know, back in the day you would get yourself whacked. But, you know, these days people, you know, teenagers, I hate you. Because why? Because of something really important, like you can't borrow the car on Saturday night, or you can't get that shade of lipstick and smear it all over your face, or whatever. Or you can't wear that article of clothing, or no, you can't go out till 4 in the morning when you're 16 years old and drink. No. Well, I hate you. Well, but you do love your parents. Now, I did not have very good parents. My parents were, they should never have been parents. They were bad at it, and sometimes they were really horrific at it. But it doesn't matter. You love your parents. Now I'm making these general sweeping statements, but I'm sure there are some people maybe who have considered this, and maybe their parents are just totally unlovable. My parents were hard to love, but I loved them anyhow. As bad as they were, and they could be pretty bad, or as non-existent as their presence or their expression of love was, nevertheless, you love your parents, and that makes it all the more difficult if they're not good parents, or if they're really awful parents, because you're torn in half because you love them anyhow. When I was working at a bookstore once, my own bookstore that I owned out in Park Slope in Brooklyn, I looked out the window. I saw a guy kicking a dog. He held a stick, too, but he was kicking his dog. And it wasn't a puppy. It was, you know, like an older-looking dog. And he was some nasty-looking guy. You could just tell from across the street from the picture window I had in my bookstore. And he's kicking his dog, and it was too much for me. There was a couple of customers in the store, and I just couldn't handle it. So I jumped up, ran outside, ran across the street, across the traffic, and grabbed the guy. And as they say in old-fashioned books, remonstrated with him. I grabbed him and threw him up against the grill of a fence. And I said, what are you doing? You can't do that. You can't be kicking this dog. And the dog did what? The dog growled at me and tried to bite my leg. And every time this guy had been kicking this dog, the dog put its head down as if it had done something wrong and it was the dog's fault and came crawling back, right? This is a classic kind of, scene. The dog came crawling back. And the guy kept yelling at it and kicking it again. And a lot of people were standing around, you know, feeling kind of helpless. But I'm not making a direct connection here. But as bad as your parents treat you, and my parents were on a scale of 1 to 10 when it comes to being very bad at their jobs, let's say up around a 9, sometimes flickering to a 10. If they just once, even for a couple of minutes, were good to me or decent or ask for my help for something, I was right there helping them out. And I felt, you know, thrilled to be able to help them for real. And, you know, they're long gone now. And when I think about them, I just picture their faces. I mean, I don't know if your parents are or aren't alive. Just picture them. Or even if they're in another place, and a lot of people, 75% of the people listening to me live in a different place than their parents if they're still alive. Or they, you know, moved out or live somewhere else. Even if you're young, you know, people don't live so much with their parents. Although these days the trend is reversed. Think about your parents. Think about your parents. Just picture their faces. And think, you know, you can automatically think. Thoughts will pop up in your head about all the awful things they did, you know, what they did to ruin your life, how if only they had been different, you would be different, you know, that you didn't understand what love is because they didn't give you any love, so you weren't able to give love to anybody else, you name it, right? But when you think about your parents, am I wrong about this, but you get this twinge. I see my father's face in front of my eyes right now. In my mind's eye, and I see my mother's face, my father generally either very depressed and sort of looking off in another direction or in a rage. Those were his two main states of being. Or sometimes, you know, laughing. He liked to laugh. He'd have a drink and he'd laugh, but everything he did was fairly extreme. And I see his ruddy red face laughing or yelling. Or I see that blank look on his face when he was sort of drifting off into a kind of a black place someplace. I see my mother's worried, anxious, almost crazy face. I see those faces in front of me. And to this day, I am acting and reenacting things that happened to me from my parents. And I don't overthink it anymore. It's just something automatic that happens. But now I'm doing this because I'm talking about it, so I'm thinking about it. And my feeling for them is a feeling that I always had. It's a kind of like just natural love. They are my parents. And the same thing happens, the same thing with my kids. I left my house. My kids were 10 years old and 5 years old. I couldn't get along with their mother anymore. And to be honest, I wasn't fit to be anybody's father. I was good as I could be when I was there, but it was driving me crazy. So I left and afterwards saw them, you know, moved about 30 blocks away and saw them, you know, twice a week, and they slept over all the time and we went places and did things. But I just couldn't endure, since I was like a child myself, I couldn't endure being somebody's father that much. And my bad, right? My everlasting legacy, which really disturbed me. Yet, my kids, when I think of my kids and the troubles they gave me, but, you know, they weren't giving me troubles on purpose. One of them was difficult in one way, and one was difficult in another way. Every kid's got their style. You know, if you've had kids, they're vastly different. Two kids could be like, you know, worlds apart. But I love my kids. So I love my parents. I love my kids. And it's difficult for me to say, although I know I do someplace. I know I do. If I reach down into the fragmented, strange, vast, universal trash bin that is my and knapsack that is my brain and my heart, you know, there were two women in my life that I loved. Been married three times. So two women that I loved, and one of them I only knew for about a total of 25 minutes in my life. It was a kind of love at first sight. And the other one I'm married to right now. And that's a combination of a certain feeling at first sight, sort of a kind of love at first sight. But then, you know, if you're married to somebody, if you're living with somebody, that's probably the hardest thing in the world to do, is to love somebody for themselves. You can love somebody. You can love somebody because they take care of you. And that's a kind of, to me, that's a kind of a childish thing. I told you there's nothing linear about this at all. It's just sort of expressions. I mean, you do, and you love your family. Robert Frost once said, home is where, when you go there, they have to take you in. Well, I suppose not necessarily, but you know, part of what he was writing in his poem was about to choose somebody who is not your blood, not your child, not your grandparents, not your parents, not your children, maybe not your sister, not your brother, but to choose someone who's a total stranger from another place, who, you know, who is not related to you in the slightest way, to choose somebody and to love them, really? Really? What kind of love is that? That's a special kind of love. It's a love that is not bred in the bone. It's a love that is not in your blood. Something, it's not imprinting. It's not your parents. It's not your children. And I think that's the hardest kind of love there is. No matter how difficult it is with your parents and your children, it's there. It's easy to love them. The love vein that runs through the rock is right there. It's thick. It's always you're able to get at it all the time. You might have arguments. You might say things that seem unforgivable, but you do love them. But with somebody who is a total stranger that you meet, and after weeks or months or years, you finally, you know, live with them. You mean you move in with them. I've been married for 25 years now to one person. My experience with love is, and this is me talking here, I'm not assuming this for anybody who's listening to me. My ability to love other people, as much as I understand what that means, and my ability to give love and my ability to receive love is really fractured. It's really fractured. My ability to love is sort of like a loose light bulb. Or a light bulb that's connected to wiring, that it's that's loose wiring. It can shine very bright. It can turn off altogether, or it can just flicker. And you can flip on the switch. Somebody else could flip on the switch, and they're not going to get anything. Sometimes you don't flip on the switch, and it decides to shine all by itself. My love is not pure and undiluted and constant. Some people have a talent for loving. Some people have a talent, literally a talent for loving. My wife has a talent for loving. She's a social worker, and she has a very large family, lots of siblings, and one of her parents is still alive, the other one isn't. And she, you know, and with me and anybody that she is close to or that needs her, she is just sort of, she just broadcasts it. She has an absolute talent for it. She's consent. Now, what do you think about when you think about love? She's always there for you, right? Sometimes she'll get a little irritated, but it takes a lot. And believe me, anybody who lives with me and has endured me for 25 years has to be a world Olympic class gold medal winner when it comes to being able to love someone else. She is able, to my absolute wonder, amazement and constant wonderment. I mean, used to be sometimes I would envy her this because I wasn't able to do that. I mean, once in a while I can be, you know, loving in my own way, but it has to be in my own way. She's just naturally affectionate and loving. Now, it's not like she doesn't have any faults. She's got faults like anybody else. There's not a whole lot of them as far as I can tell. And I, like I say, I've been married 3 times and I know other people, but she doesn't require anything from you. Her love, she gives freely because she understands the thing that I never understood. And to this day, I only partially understand. When I was married to my second wife, my ex-wife, she knew how I grew up, where in my family, nobody gave love to anybody. I think maybe one time in my entire life growing up, one person in my family, like my mother, may have hugged me, and it wasn't a very pleasant hug either. Nothing. Nobody touched anybody. Love was not given out. It was all self-involvement. And so I didn't even learn what it meant to give it, and I had no idea what it was to receive it. It wasn't being given to me. And you ask yourself, if you weren't loved when you were young, if nobody gave you any love when you were young, is it possible to give love? Can you give what you never got? Is that a question? Did you ever ask yourself that question? Like some people say to you, like your girlfriend, your boyfriend, they say to you, you know, you're not very loving, or you don't seem to know how to love. And your explanation may be, I don't know. It may be, well, nobody ever taught me. I don't even know what it means to be loved. How could I possibly love somebody else? Well, I can tell you from my own experience, and my ex-wife was telling me this because I didn't really want to, you know, have children, and she really did. In the end, I had 2 children. And she said, this is what you learn from having children, or this is what you can get. Maybe you don't learn it. Maybe you do. This is what you can get from having children. If you never got any love, if the love that you, the best you can do then is to give that love to your own children, that's the best you can do. It's not going to be what you didn't get. It can't be. If you didn't get it, you didn't get it. And some people never accept that. They're just vengeful. They're bitter about it, and they're pissed off their whole lives about it. And that keeps them, that kind of rigidity and anger keeps them from receiving any other kind of love from anybody else. And believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Holding a grudge like that, there is no room. You have to unpack that crap from the storeroom before you could put anything else in there. And though I know that intellectually, and I know that partially emotionally, it's not something I've ever done very successfully. But here, I can tell you this. I know that somebody I know who I'm very close to right now is considering having a child and is worried that since they grew up in a very disturbed family, they're really worried about having a child because they themselves have all kinds of ambivalence and bitterness about the way they grew up. Love that was given to them was intermittent, or it had a price tag on it, right? The kind of love that it's an idyllic kind of love is the kind where Carl Rogers, a famous psychologist, he called it unconditional positive regard. That's the best kind of love you can get, is unconditional positive regard. What that means is that there's no charge, right? There's no price tag on somebody else's love.
My little boy came into the kitchen this evening while I was fixing supper. And he handed me a piece of paper he'd been writing on. And after wiping my hands on my apron, I read it. And this is what it said. For mowing the yard, $5. Making my own bed this week, $1. And going to the store, 50 cents. and watching little brother while you went shopping. 25 cents for taking out the trash, $1. Getting a good report card, $5. And raking the yard, $2. Total load, $14.75. Well, I stood there looking at him expectantly, and 1,000 memories flashed through my mind. So I picked up the pen and, turning the paper over, this is what I wrote. Reading, he had great big old tears in his eyes, and he looked up at me and he said, Mama, I sure do love you. Then he took the pen and in great big letters he wrote, paid in full.
Well, I mean, I guess some of you may feel like you just had a barrel of corn syrup poured down your throat. But I like that. This will give you an example. This will give you an idea of my emotional and the level of my emotional maturity. That kind of song makes me cry. The sappier a song is like that, the more I'm liable to get teary over it. Yeah. But, you know, and obviously this woman is finally letting this kid know that that's what it's supposed to be, a lesson in love. Yes, unconditional positive regard is the ideal kind of love, where someone loves you just for yourself. They love you just for yourself, and it's not something that you have to pay for. There's no price tag on it. But I don't think anybody I've ever known has experienced that, because maybe it's not, you know, it's just not real. People, for most people, there is always a feeling, and this is where selfishness or self, is there a better word than this? Selfishness, you know, that you, is there anybody who loves? Have you done this? I mean, have you been able to love somebody and they were not required whatsoever to give you anything back? You just love them out of the goodness of your heart, and loved them because you couldn't help it. And all you wanted to do for this person was to make them happy. Now, I've known people who have approached that. I've seen people. There aren't that many, but I've seen people and I've known people, and I now actually live with somebody who has that kind of ability to love and loves without a price tag. I have no idea how that works. I have no idea how that works, because sometimes sometimes I feel that way. Sometimes, obviously, when I'm feeling good and the world is going along the way I think it should be going, and I'm not besieged by difficulties and doubts, either physical or mental, I feel generous and I feel open that way. And I do feel that way a little bit about my kids. When they need me, I give them whatever I can give them, you know. And I do feel that way. Yeah, I do feel that way about my children. And one thing I wanted to recoup here before I gloss over it and forget about it is I was talking about, yes, you can. If you didn't get, this is the miracle of what love might mean. You know, I'm just talking about love here today as if I maybe understand it. When my ex-wife told me, you know, if you love your kids and really give them everything that you didn't get, it's the only way that you can get back what you didn't get. If you're married to somebody, if there's somebody you're in love with, and you love them free of charge, if you're not constantly ambivalent or irritated with them, or you love them because then they'll love you back and they'll give you something you need, and they'll provide you with shelter and care, or they'll give you there'll be a kind of a parent to you, somebody who will take care of you the way that you were never taken care of. Now, it's not like you consciously think this. You know, most people don't say, I doubt hardly anybody, unless somebody who's very calculating, says, I'm going to do this for my wife, or I'm going to do this for my parents, because if I do that, then they'll give me this. Then they'll love me. Then I can ask them for something. In other words, there are price tags hanging all over everything. And you could feel that with a lot of people. I mean, I've known people who make their the cost of their love very expensive. It's not no charge. It's very expensive. If you want any of their regard, if you want their care, if you want their love, you pay a heavy price for it. You have to do what they say. You have to act the way they want you to act. You have to be quiet when you're supposed to be quiet. You have to do the thing that they want you to do. You have to become a lawyer. You have to become a doctor. You have to go into the business that they have. You have to believe what they believe. You have to have the same opinions they have. I mean, there are people who put heavy prices. Now, I suppose this is something that people will get irritated about. But I've seen women, like in that sappy, beautiful song, I've seen women give away love. I've seen women give love with very little cost to it. Whereas men, more often, there is a price to their love. There are price tags with men. Now, I don't know how many people are capable of doing that, and I've only met a few, but there is selfishness involved. You do things for your parents. When you're a little kid, you do things for your parents sometimes because you want them to love you. It's something you don't even know that you're doing, right? There are fields of psychology which say there really is no such thing as unselfish love. I mean, that love is always partially or almost entirely selfish. That you love people because they will do something for you. And you will give them things. You will act the way they want you to act. You will express love to them. You will be cute. You will be funny. You'll be interesting so that they will actually love you. So I don't really know how much, how much anybody really approaches that. The other thing about love is, and here's what Shakespeare said about it. Love is not, this is the first line of one of his most famous sonnets. Love is not love which alters when alteration finds. Love is not love which alters when alteration finds. That's the other kind of love that endures, and that it seems to me that is, now that's Bill's opinion, that's Bill Shakespeare's opinion. But there is something to that, right? The kind of love that you'd be looking for, the kind of love that you'd want from somebody is you get sick, really sick, and you're unable to provide or to be the kind of person that this other person is used to or that they fell in love with the first time they knew you or for the first few years. Get old and you don't look the way you used to look. You have all kinds of problems. And yet they still love you after 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. They still love you as much. Now, love changes. This is almost impossible to explain. If you see an old couple walking down the street, they've been together for maybe your parents are like this, or maybe you've been like this. You know, now I'm talking to people who are my age, and I'm way up there. You've been with somebody 20, 30, 40 years. It changes. And with all the stuff you go through, this is the kind of love, you know, like if you have kids or if you have a marriage and it lasts, or you're living with somebody for 30, 40, 50 years, you've been through the most astounding things. You've been through near-death experiences, awful illnesses. You've been through your kids growing up, and sometimes growing up strange, or having their own, you know, precarious lives, failures in your career, inability temporarily or even for long periods of time or even permanently to be the person that you once were, that they first fell in love with. Certainly your looks go, your body goes when you get older. And yet the kind of love they have for you gets deeper. It gets deeper. And it the more, it's not just habit. A lot of love is habit. With older people, love becomes habit. And you can see that from the outside. It's, you know, you get up every morning and you have the same rituals and you do the same things. And, you know, I'm no one to judge. But the kind of love I'm talking about is that it's conditioned. It's like you have an old baseball glove and you've had it your whole life, you know, and you've oiled it and you've pounded it and it's caught 1,000, you know, line drives. You're thrown in the dirt and it's been loaned to other people, and yet it's supple and you put your hand in it and it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect, right? And this is the kind of like worn out, worn in, worn together love that people can have of each other. And That is a definition of love. Love, according to this, is he puts it in the negative here. Love is not love which alters when alteration finds. If you love somebody for real, then you keep loving them. But this requires a certain maturity or understanding of life. And I was talking about last week that I don't really have so much of that. Now my wife is she was just 60 years old. And I am 69 years old. Our birthdays are one day apart just recently. And over the last several years, and she sees the same thing from her side, I see the same thing from my side. What do you see with your eyes? You know, you see older people get older. Their skin gets rougher. When I first met her, she was young, and I was relatively youngish. Not so young, but youngish. You know, muscles, I had muscles, I had, strength, I had physical abilities and attractions, which, have not disappeared, but have changed radically. You know, my hair used to be one way, now it's another way. What there is left of it, you know, there's some, but, you know, it's not like it used to be. I mean, I don't look like the Greek god that I once looked like. That's true. Boys and girls, it's true. And my wife, very, very, very beautiful. And, you know, just absolutely beautiful in every way, physically. These things have, you know, they can't last. Wrinkles, muscles go, things fall down, gravity gets you. And yet, my feeling about my wife is that she seems more beautiful to me. Now, it's not like I'm blind. I mean, I can see wrinkles. I can see, you know, this, you know, drooping, that sagging, whatever. And yet she is more beautiful. But it's true. She looks a lot younger and is in a lot better shape than people her age. But that's beside the point. To me, it wouldn't even matter. She is as beautiful or more beautiful to me than she's ever been before. So that kind of love, which doesn't alter when alteration finds, if you love somebody and you find out something about them that is, you know, it seems to be horrible, or more precisely to the point, if you love somebody and they get sick, you know, a lot of times people get very sick and they're unable, through no fault of their own, to be what they once were, or to provide or to give you what they once gave you. And yet, if you still love them, easy to say, though, people can drag you down. It can test maybe, I don't know, your not your love, but your patience. And I told you before, there's no answers here. There's only questions that I'm talking about out loud. The thing about this thing about children, it does work to the extent that I was able to do it and that I'm still able to do it. You can love your children, and that's the best kind of love you're going to get, childlike love you're going to get. In other words, nobody loved you. If nobody loved you hardly at all, or if you didn't get that kind of love, you say to yourself, how could I shouldn't have children, or how could I ever love anybody? How could I love anybody? I didn't get any love. I don't feel any love. And yet you have children, and by giving them, in my imperfect way, by giving them love, reading them stories, things that I never got. You read them stories, you take them places, you hug them all the time if you can. You put up with their temper tantrums, you stick with them. Love involves sticking. It involves sticking. In Tai Chi, they have something called sticking. When you don't fight in Tai Chi so much. What you do is you have these sort of bouts with people. And the highest, most prized quality in these Tai Chi bouts is if you stick with somebody. That is to say, however they move, you move with them. You could actually even touch them. If they move their hands or they move back, you move with them. If they move their hands towards you, you move back a little bit. But you stick with them. You never separate from them. You never let go of them. And it's a kind of a ballet. And sticking with somebody is very, very hard to do in Tai Chi. It's really hard to do in life. It's really hard to do in life. That doesn't mean that you don't get irritated like, oh, no, again. And then you question yourself. I'm not really good at loving. You know, I'm not really good at loving. And like I said, this person who I know who's in their 30s, considering having a kid, coming from a very disturbed family where there was, where the love was intermittent and there was a lot of price tags, is afraid to have a child. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage and bravery to do that, because you are afraid that you're going to pass on that same bitterness and price tag, and your ambivalence is going to get passed on. Doesn't have to. You can break the chain. And I was able to do it as much as I was able to do it. And it does work, because you're not going to get what you didn't get when you were a kid. There is no love like that. You got it or you didn't get it. And you could stay bitter your whole life. And I have. Up until recently, the last couple of years, I don't feel that bitter anymore. But and it like I say, it leaves no room for any other love to come in. Mr. Engineer, how much time we got here? 15? Okay. We don't have a standard engineering setup sometimes here. There's a lot of stuff going on around here. But now there are other things. There's other kinds of love that don't have to be, romantic love. They don't have to be. They don't have to be that kind of love where that's involved between two people, or whether you can accept it or whether you can give it or receive it. I think what I'm going to do is take a little break here and talk about maybe other kinds of love that there are, maybe a little bit about some of the romantic stuff I left out. I mean, teenagers are always falling in love, right? That kind of Romeo and Juliet thing, you're dying of love. If you don't have the loved one, you'll die. How much that resembles real love, I don't know. But who's to say real love? I mean, when you're a teenager, that's real love. When you're in Romeo and Juliet, when the play opens, Romeo is sighing and dying of love for, I don't know who it is, Roxanne or somebody. And somebody says, what's your problem? You know, why are you hanging around droopy-eared like that? He says, well, because I don't have Roxanne. But then he comes across Juliet, and he understands what love is, that all-consuming kind of love. And you can't ever say, I guess, about love. You can't judge love. If that's what love is to a teenager, if that's what love is to a kid, if somebody's love, as long as it's not really destructive, as long as it's not consuming without giving anything back, then who are you to judge? I mean, every marriage is different. Every couple is different. There are, hundreds of millions of couples in the world, maybe a couple of billion couples in the world. each one of them has their own universe and their own complex crystalline structure of love. There's just no way. So we'll take a break here. This is the kind of love I was talking about before, where you just want somebody to take care of you. I understand that. You understand that too, right? But it's that kind of wishing for a parent rather than the kind of love eventually where you give and receive equally.
There's a saying old says that love is blind. Still we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I'm going to seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's a big affair I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. I'd like to add his initial to my monogram. Tell me, where is the shepherd for this lost lamb? There's a somebody I'm longing to see.
Absolutely beautiful. So if I judged, if I sound judgmental at all, if I was saying this is love or that's love, believe me, I have no idea. I know no better about love than I ever did. All I can do is observe and, you know, report what I've done. One thought I had in addition to the idea of loving your children, and that's the closest you can get to the love you didn't get as a child, is, and maybe you've had this experience, whenever I've loved my children and done tremendous amount of, gone to a lot of effort for them over and over again, or there was some extreme situation or they needed me really badly and I helped them out. And then, you know, even when they were grown or when they were away at, when they were away at school or something like that, after I hang up the phone or after they leave the apartment, you know, when they're grown and they go away and I've helped them out in some way, or, you know, after they go off to school or after they go home and I've been with them, there's a feeling I have inside. And this is probably because I didn't do enough work unpacking that old storage room with the old bitterness in it. I always had that feeling of, even though I did love them, and I got something great, wonderful, inexpressibly beautiful from helping them, I felt a little emptiness afterwards. Like a certain kind of like, now where's mine? You know, it was a thought that made me feel bad about myself, but it seemed like a kind of melancholy, a bittersweet feeling, like after I really helped them. That maybe that just means I haven't really matured enough. But there are other kinds of love, obviously. There's you could love your work. Some people absolutely love their work, and they are some of the luckiest people in the world. If you have work, and most of America is sick in its mind and in its heart, because it goes to work every day, and it does work that they don't care about. But you could love your work more, probably. You could get more out of your work. But some people are just lucky they love their work. There's two kinds of work. I've done all sorts of work in my life, a million different kinds of jobs. The two kinds of work that I truly love to do are talking on the radio, and it's not even work to me. So when you love your work so much, you don't even think of it as work. You think of it as, I don't know what, an expression of love. An expression of love that's being channeled through you. I loved working with old books, absolutely loved working with old books. And that is the way it is. You love your work. You don't even feel like it is work. So there's that kind of work. You could love a piece of art. I mean, you could love a beautiful song or a beautiful piece of sculpture or something. Artists have this passionate love affair with their work, absolutely passionate love affair with their work. You could love a place. There are some places that are so beautiful that you walk, let's say you walk through the woods, or it's a place that you know of, like a bridge or a brook or underneath a stream. It could be a little oasis, a little park in the midst of the city, and with when the flowers come out in the spring. You could love a place. You could love a moment. You could love a moment. You could be sitting or walking someplace, and all of a sudden, is the word grace applicable here? A sort of magic happens, and you feel like you're suddenly in connection with everybody in the whole world. You're in connection with the entire universe, and you're filled with a kind of absolutely inexplicable love. You couldn't put it into words. So you could love a place. You could love a moment in time. And, you know, these are different kinds of love. But today I've been just trying to unpack some ideas and thoughts I had about what love is. Now, I really don't know, and I've never been very good at it, especially the giving and receiving. That's what it's all about. Love, give. You give love, you receive love. Well, my gate has been mostly shut for in both directions for most of my life. So that has been the work of my life, I think. The idea of giving love and receiving love. Well, in the end, what does it matter what I say or what anybody says about love? What does it matter? If you're really lucky, when you feel it, you'll know it for sure.
He saw.